You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, serving San Diego and East County, and streaming live worldwide on knsj.org.
Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio representing the public interest, not special interest. Broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso on KNSJ 89.1 FM, your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. Recently, a Voice of San Diego investigation revealed that a government agency, many of you may have never heard of, the Wildlife Services arm of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, has been killing a very large number of animals with very little oversight of what's really going on. I'm here today with Congresswoman Susan Davis, whose office is looking into this matter and pushing forward some legislation to try to address it. Congresswoman, tell us about the severity of the problem.
Your numbers alone, I think, indicate that there are a number of animals that are being killed every year.
19,000 here in San Diego County alone.
And we want to know more about that, and I think that our constituents would like to know why that is so.
What kind of animals are these?
Well, there are a variety of animals. I mean, some small animals and even, you know, larger animals that can, in some instances, be threatening individuals, but in many of those cases, they are not necessarily threatening, but they may be more of a nuisance to people, and they may also be killed for sport in a number of circumstances.
We're talking mountain lions, which are protected under California law. If an individual were to go out and shoot one, that would be illegal. They could go to jail and face a huge fine, and yet this is happening.
A lot of this concern, of course, is that the agency is coming in, and what we want to know is, under what circumstances are these animals being killed? It's another attempt at transparency and giving people an opportunity to look at that information, to look at that data, to understand the circumstances under which that occurred. And I think for the agency as well to be able to do what we kind of call these after-action reports, so they know, was there a attempt to prevent that animal's death?
Right.
What was going on in the interim? What was happening, whether weather-wise or other kinds of threats to the animal? And why is it that we're seeing these kind of numbers? How do these numbers even compare to other communities and other areas?
And there's also a whistleblower that came forward, too, who is claiming that he believes the numbers may be 10 times what they're saying, at least in terms of the accidental deaths, because not only is it animals killed on purpose, but also some of them get caught in traps. And some of these are very inhumane ways that these animals are dying, too. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The concerns that we've heard do address the traps that are out there. And we want to know, you know, why are we doing that? Is there a better way? You know, if we do feel that animals are threatening to people who are camping or are in the area.
This includes ducks and songbirds and a lot of animals, raccoons, things that don't really seem like they'd be a dire threat to people or livestock for that matter. Now, one of the concerns, as you noted, is that other steps short of lethal force may not be being used when they could be. For example, areas where there's mountain lions, simply suggesting that property owners pen up animals at night in an appropriate shelter. Or I interviewed a cattle rancher out here just a couple weeks ago who'd had lost one animal to mountain lions some years ago. And since then, he got herding dogs. And the herding, simply adding a dog to herd the cattle, will protect them from these predators, and they haven't had any more losses.
That's right. So we're still in the process of accumulating this data and trying to ask these questions. And I certainly call upon my constituents to help us out with that, because we've heard from them that they want us to look into these issues. And that's really the purpose of this legislation. Sometimes legislation can bring about greater clarity in terms of what is the problem that we're trying to address.
And Voice of San Diego has made efforts. They've done a lot of public records acts, and they've been stonewalled on a lot of it. The agency does not seem to want to explain many of these deaths, and they act in secrecy. They are not allowing reporters to go along on any of these kills. It seems that they don't want us, the public, to know what they're doing, or the press to know what they're doing.
Well, what we'd like to know is, what's the purpose? Why do they find that it is necessary to kill these animals? And are there other choices that can be made about what would happen? And so, we want to know the information. I think that's what this is all about, more transparency and providing more understanding to the public so that we can move forward and do the best thing on behalf of these animals.
Absolutely. Do we know the number of your bill, and can you tell us just exactly what it would do and what the status is on it? Now, you have a bill, H.R. 2074. Tell us exactly what the bill would do and what the status is on that right now.
This bill would allow the public to be able to access information about the number of animals that are killed in the wild and the circumstances under which they're killed.
Very good. And then presumably, if it were found that anything looked inappropriate, then possibly further regulatory action could be taken at that time?
Exactly.
Well, it should be noted that Congresswoman Davis is a very big champion of animal rights, and I believe that you've been recognized before by the Humane Society?
I'm very honored to have been recognized on a number of occasions, actually, by the Humane Society, and will continue to engage the public, really, in this issue and many others that relate to animals.
Well, very good. I'm sure that the wildlife lovers out there across East County appreciate that. And we are very grateful to you for coming on the show today and bringing us the latest from Washington.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
This is Arielle Johansson. We are here with Miriam Raftery, editor of East County Magazine. Miriam, you've been reporting on wildfires for some time now. We're discussing the Chariot Fire currently burning in East County. You were one of the first to get reports in on the damage.
It's really heartbreaking, Arielle. The latest that we've heard, and I should say this show is being taped the day ahead for this segment, but as of right now, we know there are at least 120 structures that have burned. And that includes a historic 87-year-old lodge at the Shrine Camp. It also includes one of two important buildings at the Sierra Club Camp. Their main lodge survived. Foster Lodge is still there as of right now, although it remains threatened. But they had another camp building that was large and very important to them that is gone. Many, many campgrounds have burned, and cabins and private homes as well, and at least 60 more remain threatened as of right now.
Yes, it is heartbreaking. Miriam, you became a part of this story since the new KNSJ transmitter is in Descanso and it was in the line of the fire.
Well, we did. The team right over there got a very firsthand experience in why our wildfire reports are so important. We learned that just 2 days after our transmitter went up and we began broadcasting on the 4th of July, this fire broke out 2 or 3 days. And next thing we knew, we were hearing that the fire was only half a mile away. And so we were all kind of waiting with bated breath. And fortunately, our reporter, Nadine Abbott, was able to get permission from CAL FIRE to go behind the line. She was one of the first reporters, if not the first, in to assess the damage on Mount Laguna, to report on what had burned, but also to get all the way to the top of Monument Peak. And she reported on quite a heroic battle by the firefighters up there to save these transmitters. And it includes not only KNSJ's, but actually CAL FIRE has their own transmitter up there for emergency broadcasts.
So that's where the actual battle of the fire was happening.
Well, one of the places. Certainly they were battling to save the homes and lodges and things as well. But they actually brought in what they call a very large air tanker. These things are massive, and they were airdropping fire retardant all around the towers. She came back, and our first question was, are our towers still standing? And she said, they are, but they're pink from the firefighting foam that they sprayed all over. They were fighting also to keep the fire, trying to keep it from getting into the Cleveland National Forest and those pine trees up there. And unfortunately, the winds were just so strong, 30 miles an hour when she was up there. We really want to thank Nadine, by the way, for being so courageous to go up there. These are dangerous, dangerous conditions, and she is willing to go out there and put herself on the front lines to bring that news back for our listeners.
And Miriam, East County Magazine and Nadine and other reporters, you're sometimes the first one or the only one to report sometimes on the East County fires. Is that correct?
Well, yes. We started East County Magazine and our wildfire alerts, which are now called the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts, thanks to the generous support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. One of the reasons we began this whole thing is because during the Harris Fire, I was at my house at midnight, and I started getting emails from people I'd interviewed through the years for different publications, print weekly newspapers out here. And they said, Miriam, we hope you're still awake because our phone lines burned down, our cell phone towers burned down, and there's fire all around our town, and we can't figure out how to get out. We tried this road and it was blocked, and that one. Can you tell us where the shelters are? And by the way, the county emergency website is crashed and nobody can get on it.
So they were looking to you for answers of what to do in that critical situation.
Yes. Unfortunately, I was able to get info to them. But wow, I said, we have got to do better than that to keep people informed. It doesn't, no matter how good a job a print weekly does of reporting the news, it's not good enough during a fire situation when you need news right now. So people can go to our website, they can get updates, www.eastcountymagazine.org, our site. If you wish to, you can also sign up for the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts, which are free, and they come via email, and you can also get them by Twitter.
And isn't it true that after the Colorado fire a few years ago that people were using social media, many people, as a main way to get information during a disaster such as this?
Well, that's true. And actually, one of the many sources we use is Facebook and Twitter. There's a great site called the Brush Fire Party Line out there, started by some Lakeside people. But we'll post stuff there. People will repost our stuff on Facebook. They'll retweet it. And next thing you know, it's just all over the place. So it really has revolutionized the way that we can get information out during an emergency.
Would you like to tell the folks about, on the lighter side, something that can only happen in East County?
Well, you know, we started the alerts for fires. We quickly added other things, too. So we'll do severe weather alerts and severe traffic situations, you know. But we also occasionally do get those humorous ones. It's cow in the roadway, herd of cattle in the roadway, goats by the side of the road. Don't be distracted by the four-footed brush grazing team, which, by the way, I would like to conclude by reminding everybody, if you haven't already done it and you live out in the backcountry, please do your defensible space, cut the brush around your home. It could save your lives and help firefighters take a stand and defend your home.
Thank you, Miriam, for offering more advice and a comprehensive look at your work bringing this service to people of East County.
Welcome. We're happy to do that.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. The 4th of July festivities may be over, but there are all kinds of activities this week all over East County. And don't forget the local car shows, summer concerts, and movies after dark at the park that are happening all summer long. Listen for details on these recurring events on Destination East County. Descanso Days Back to the Old West on Saturday, July 13th will feature a parade at 10 a.m., followed by live music and a fair all day long. The fair is presented by the Descanso Town Hall Association at the historic Town Hall. Live music will include a steel kettle drum band, Just Friends Bluegrass, Breaking Bad, and Barbed Wire Country Western. Native American dancer Eric Running Path will also perform. A Kids Fun Zone will feature games, a teepee, and Indian sand painting. A game-on-game theater located inside an air-conditioned 55-foot semi-trailer will have video games, music, laser lights, and more. Vendor booths and opportunity drawings will round out the event. Also this weekend, you can savor English high tea at Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center on Saturday or Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. Reservations are required for the teas, which serve appetizers, sandwiches, petite sweets, and an assortment of rich flavored teas. On Saturday night, July 13th, the whole family can enjoy outdoor fun flicks for a free showing of Rise of the Guardians, starting at dusk at Sycamore Canyon Preserve in Lakeside. Viejas also hosts free movies in the park, with showings of The Dark Knight on Thursday, July 11th, and The Hunger Games on Sunday, July 14th, in the park at the Viejas Outlet Center. The Golden State Historic Railway Train runs each Saturday evening at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo in July and August, allowing visitors to ride the rails through East County's rugged scenic backcountry. All summer long, you can also find free concerts on Friday nights in downtown El Cajon, on Sundays at 6 p.m. in La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park, and at Santee's Town Center Community Park every Thursday evening from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Santee's next event is a blues and barbecue coming up on July 18th. Classic car aficionados can also check out La Mesa's Back to the 50s every Thursday night in the downtown village, as well as El Cajon's Classic Car Nights each Wednesday evening all summer long. Plus, mark your calendars for July 27th when three big events are happening: Pine Valley Days, the Music in the Mountains Festival, and Watermelon Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona. More on those coming up soon. KNSJ invites you to the station's launch party August 3rd at Mission Trails Regional Park. Plus, East County Magazine and KNSJ will be hosting a barbecue and Wild West Fest August 10th at the Descanso Town Hall. Watch for details and reservations on our websites. You can find details on these events and more on our calendar of events and in our festivals section at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Send information on your major events to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Have a great week, and we'll see you around East County.
Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy. This is Miriam Raftery. I'm here today with Eric Lund, the new general manager of the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce. Eric brings some impressive qualifications to the job. He's the former president and CEO of the San Diego East Visitors Bureau, and he's served as vice president of community relations for the San Diego Tourism Authority. He's also an adjunct faculty member at Grossmont and Southwestern College, teaching business and tourism courses. He's held high-level positions at tourism-related organizations, including Invader Cruises, H&M Landing, San Diego Railroad Museum, and San Diego Harbor Excursion. He's an avid sailor, and he's served as first mate of Windjammer Cruises and as a licensed Coast Guard captain before taking the helm at the East County Chamber. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Miriam.
Eric, what do you consider the Chamber's greatest strengths, and what areas are you hoping to change or improve?
Well, we have a terrific chamber representing San Diego East County. It's been around for over 100 years, and I think that's a strength. But the primary strength of a chamber is really in its membership. We have about 650 members currently, and really that's where the strength lies.
The Chamber has had its share of some financial troubles recently, due largely to the economy and some declining membership. Recently, they let their last CEO go. What is your strategy for turning around the Chamber finances and charting that course for growth that you've told us about?
Well, again, a strong Chamber is really only as strong as its membership, so our first step and highest priority is to build our membership representation back up. But also, we have a couple of other areas where, from a financial standpoint, we can be strong. Those two areas include marketing and providing marketing services to our members and the community. And the third being the events that the chamber puts on, which also helps to generate revenue.
Tell us about some of those events.
Well, we have a terrific slate of events each year, including First Friday breakfasts every month, where we have the business community, about 150, 200 businesses come in and enjoy breakfast and basically build relationships with each other. And we also have some educational content with great speakers. We also conduct monthly mixers, and then annually we have some great events like our Women in Leadership program.
I love that one.
Yeah, it's a great. And we just completed a health fair at Grossmont Shopping Center, which was terrific, and that was through the Grossmont Sharp Healthcare District. We also annually have a business fair, which this year we're planning on adding innovation and technology into that mix so that it's going to be quite interesting and we'll have some great educational content.
Very good. And you do a leadership training program also.
We do. Our leadership program goes throughout the entire year. We have a group of people who basically commit one day every month, the whole day, and they go out and actually understand and experience and are educated about different segments of our community, like the legal side or the business community and economics. And after they complete that whole journey, they actually graduate. We just completed our graduating class just last week.
Yes, and you've got an impressive roster of graduates from that, I might add. Given your background in tourism, Eric, do you envision tourism playing a greater role in East County's economy?
Yeah, tourism is obviously our second largest business market in San Diego County, very important to the East region, of course. We have wide open spaces, a great rural destination. We're kind of San Diego's playground when you really think about it, for local residents, but also for visitors who want to enjoy our foothills, our mountains, our desert even. Mm-hmm. And we have now beautiful wineries to visit, wonderful towns and quaint places, history, all kinds of great things to see.
So ecotourism, and as Supervisor Jacob has recently mentioned, agritourism are important components for the future here, you think?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a perfect fit for the East region. When you look at everything from La Mesa east to the county line and from the border north to Mount Palomar, we have a number of wonderful wineries throughout the region, and there's more adding to the list all the time. We also are the brewery capital of, you know, the world, just about. So we have new breweries popping up throughout the region. From an ag culture standpoint, we still have great ranches where you can do ranch tours. We have wonderful bed and breakfast. So we have many opportunities for people to really experience a rural atmosphere and environment.
Do you think that we need balance when it comes to the types of industries we encourage in East County? And is there a risk of destroying the values that tourists and residents value out here if there are too many, for example, large energy projects or development inside Cleveland National Forest, as some have recently proposed?
Yeah, it's critical that we always keep our eye on intelligent planning and that we're considering how we're impacting the rural areas as well as our urban cores. And when you really consider, you know, businesses that move into the area, at the same time, you don't want to restrict business and dampen it and make it difficult for a business to open and to operate in the region. We need to think more like Texas, but at the same time have prudent planning in the mix so that we're being smart about it.
Looking into your crystal ball, what do you see in the future for East County's economy, and what do you believe are the best strategies for economic growth?
I think the future of East County is very bright. We have this wonderful concept called Aerotropolis, which is around Gillespie Field. It's something that we formed a tri-alliance, which includes the tourism industry, the economic development industry, and chambers. And basically what we're trying to do is improve our supply chains with small businesses, matching that up with government and with government contracts, so that we're able to stimulate business and really create a much better business environment throughout the region.
And jobs.
And it's going to be centered around Gillespie Field, which is really wonderful because that's right here in our East County.
Very good. Now, the Chamber has some trips abroad planned for its members in the community as well. Can you tell our listeners what some of those excursions are that are coming up, and also where people can get more information about Chamber activities?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can get information by going to eastcountychamber.org. And we've got information about all of our travel trips there. But we have wonderful trips. It's a great program. And we plan them out so that they're completely coordinated. All you do is show up with your suitcase and away you go. And you can get all the information about our travel trips there. Our next trip is really exciting. It's to Costa Rica. It's an educators tour. We have educators from the local region going to Costa Rica and meeting educators there, as an example of some of the kinds of trips that we put together. But we also have trips to Ireland, to the South Pacific, to France and Paris, to also to New York City during the holidays.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Eric, thank you very much for joining us today on East County Magazine's Live.
Thank you for having me, Miriam. Enjoyed being here.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is Rebecca Lightbound. I'm here with East County Magazine editor Miriam Raftery on KNSJ 89.1, the Network for Social Justice. Miriam, what is the definition of social justice?
Rebecca, that's a great question. It's all about justice for all people within our society, simply put.
What does that mean in 2013?
Today, social justice means many things. Here in East County, for example, it could include the rights of rural residents, such as small farmers, or communities with environmental justice issues, such as people living near big energy projects like the wind farms, where there are some health issues not being addressed.
And what else?
Well, of course, social justice includes ethnic and religious minorities, such as our many Native Americans, Latinos, and Iraqi Chaldeans here in East County. But it also includes the poor and the homeless, and it includes speaking out on issues impacting the elderly or our businesses. We'll be covering issues facing working people, of course, but also issues facing small business owners who are the backbone of our economy here in East County.
Are there any other voices that would not be included?
On East County Magazine's show, our goal actually is to include all voices in the community, although we'll make a special effort to include those voices that are not being heard elsewhere.
Will the show cover issues beyond social justice?
Yes, absolutely. In addition to some stories on social justice, we will also include a wide variety of topics, such as top news stories every week, features on local musicians, we'll be telling you about the most exciting festivals and events, and specialty topics such as gardening, our local wine industry, energy environmental issues, wildfire alerts, and people power. In other words, people and organizations doing good things for our community and our world.
Thanks for that information. We look forward to listening to the new twist on social justice issues here in East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
I'm here again today with Duncan McFetridge, director of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation. Duncan is going to tell us about a lawsuit that his organization has filed, along with some others, against the San Diego Association of Governments, SANDAG, over its land use and transportation climate change plan. Duncan, tell us what's wrong with this plan.
Thank you, Miriam, for this interview. This is what we call the world's most important lawsuit. I say that for this reason. This is the first of a state-legislated climate change plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It's a, both a land use and a transportation, a $200 billion 40-year plan that's supposed to be a model for the nation. Now think about this. Because of the threat, you know, everyone knows about the climate change. So this is a monumental, important plan.
Did it achieve that?
No. What's amazing is this. The plaintiffs in this case turned out to be the California Attorney General, California Sierra Club, and Center for Biological Diversity. And what we proved in court was that this plan was a fraud. The emissions actually increase over the life of the plan.
And one of the reasons for that is because it placed heavy emphasis on building more freeways to accommodate more and more traffic instead of some rational alternatives. What could they have done instead?
Here's what's missing in that plan, exactly. We call it the Freeway First Plan. Folks, everyone knows we've got to get out of our automobile for health reasons, for energy reasons, for housing reasons, for community reasons. And so SANDAG promoted this Freeway First, and we call it Transit Last Plan instead of the reverse.
So you would have liked to see more emphasis on mass transit, trolleys, buses.
Yeah, or at least even there's supposed to be an informational agency. Give us the information for infill development and a transit-based cities, which we don't have. But at least model those. And SANDAG didn't even model them to see how those land use transportation scenarios would reduce emissions. Very important.
So instead, their policies are supporting more urban sprawl, more rural sprawl, which encroaches on the forest that you're so concerned about.
Thank you. And our farmland and our resources.
Now, you've been joined by some powerful forces here. The California Attorney General, I understand, has weighed in your favor.
Yeah, now this is remarkable when you think about it. The California Attorney General joined this lawsuit because of its importance to our future. So to have something this strong and powerful in government on your side is sending huge signals.
What happens next?
Unfortunately, wouldn't you know it? SANDAG actually is spending your money, public money, millions, appealing and diverting this whole issue. It's inexcusable, but that's what's happening, and that's San Diego County.
Do you think we're going to see any change in that now that we have Mayor Filner in the city of San Diego, who has some appointees to SANDAG, a pretty big voice there, and certainly Art Madrid has been a voice also critical of what SANDAG did in its plan.
There are voices for change, and they're very important. And Mayor Filner is immensely important because he is a mayor for about one half the region, one half the population. So and he has a strong voice at SANDAG. However, he's only one voice. So there's some promise out there.
So we may be going to court to see this settled.
It's simply up in the air. The inertia that's driving things, it's very difficult to change.
What can the public do, and where can they get more information?
We have detailed studies and articles on transitsandiego.org. That will come up on the CNFF website. But what people can do is we outline actions to contact your local representative, of course, your SANDAG, write letters to SANDAG. Any organization is involved. It doesn't matter what organization, church, neighborhood, music organization, health organization. This affects every man, woman, and child in San Diego now and in the future. So sign up, volunteer, make your voice heard.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Duncan.
Thank you very much, Mary.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, serving San Diego and East County, and streaming live worldwide on knsj.org.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I just came from a client's house where we spent almost all of our time talking about how she needs to change her watering. When I asked her, "How often do these sprinklers come on?" she said, "Every day." And I said, "Oh my goodness." And I said, "What's your motivation in having me here today? What is it that you need us to talk about?" And she says, "I'm spending so much money on water, and it doesn't really pay for itself because I'm not getting the kind of fruit I want and my plants don't look that great." So I thought this would be a great thing to talk about. Most of us overwater, and in overwatering, that really means we're probably watering much too shallow and much too often. Here it's hot and the sun beats down on the soil and it dries out the soil, and then the roots get dried out and then the plant suffers. How do we change that? Well, we change it by not watering every day, every other day, every third day. What we want to do is possibly not even change the mechanics of how we're watering. We just want to go to the time clock and change the timing. If you're watering for 5 minutes every day, you would do much better for your plants to water 20 minutes every fourth day, and then possibly even stretch it out from there with a few other tricks I'll tell you. But the main thing to understand is, if you are watering every day for just a few minutes, then what's happening is the roots are only going to grow where the water is, in the top 4 to 5 to 6 inches of soil. And in that depth, there is no resistance built in for when the Santa Anas come, for when it gets to be past the 4th of July and it's 100 degrees in East County or higher. Those poor plants have to depend on where their roots have grown in that surface area of the soil. So what happens when you change that? What happens is that the more water you give, the less frequently, the further down the roots will go. So if you can train your plant roots by watering correctly, the roots will grow down deeper. They will withstand our heavy, heavy winds and that beating down sun of midsummer, and your plants will be much healthier and much happier. This is especially true of plants that come that are either native here, which you hardly ever water, or the plants that most of us use, the Mediterranean type plants. These are plants that are used to going a while between waterings. Your citrus trees. People come to me and say their citrus isn't doing very well. It looks kind of funny. I say, "How often are you watering?" "Every other day." "Okay, that's the problem." You don't even have to go look to find out what the problem is. What you need to do is water your citrus between maybe once a week. If it's a big old tree and it's been in a long time, every couple of weeks, maybe every 3 weeks. I have a lemon tree on my property that we water religiously in June, July, August, and September, once each month. But when we do water, we water it nice and deep. We water it so that the water goes down at least 2 feet deep. Makes a huge difference. And then the other thing that we're going to do with our watering issue is we're going to mulch everything. But that's something I'll talk about in another one of these episodes.
This is Caprice Harrison bringing you a true tale from East County's past, a colorful chapter from our history that may soon be revived. Ernest Dahlman, Chief Executive Officer of Pacific Imperial Railroad, has announced he has signed a 99-year lease with the San Diego and Arizona Eastern Railway Company and is raising funds to restore and operate the Desert Line tracks through mountains and deserts in San Diego, Imperial County, and Baja, Mexico. He hopes it'll link up with the trolley and train lines in San Diego, as well as a transcontinental railway route to the east. The route in East County includes the rugged Carrizo Gorge, once a pinnacle of engineering accomplishment on what early engineers called the Impossible Railroad. The idea for the railway started with Edward Harriman, who controlled the Union Pacific Railroad and Southern Pacific lines. He partnered with sugar mogul John D. Spreckels, who, despite numerous ownership changes and calamities, led the Herculean effort to complete the line. Groundbreaking was held in 1907, but soon after, a depression caused funds to dry up. Then Harriman died, and his heirs canceled the contract with Spreckels, who raised the money on his own. In 1910, the first passengers were carried to Agua Caliente Hot Springs, but the next year, revolutions broke out in Mexico, and workers left their jobs until the rebels surrendered. Next, Southern Pacific sued Spreckels, trying to get back $3 million it had advanced, but the suit was later dismissed. World War I broke out in Europe. There was no money for railroad construction. The line, it seemed, was cursed. In 1916, the worst floods ever to strike San Diego at that time washed out dams and roads, flooding Campo Creek. An engine derailed and sunk in the mud. In 1917, the U.S. government seized all the major railroads to fuel the war effort, and construction halted. Spreckels went to Washington, D.C. and convinced the government to grant an exception, arguing that the line was vital for defense due to military installations in San Diego. Finally, construction began on the toughest stretch of tracks, the steep and rocky Carrizo Gorge. Plans called for 17 tunnels along the 11-mile stretch. A cave-in killed a workman who was buried in the collapse. Work was also slowed by the influenza epidemic worldwide, which sickened many in the construction camp. Finally, the work was complete, and the Gold Spike Limited made its run from San Diego to the Carrizo Gorge station. Spreckels jumped down, pulled off his coat, and drove in a solid gold spike on November 15, 1919. In its heyday, the line carried passengers to the Agua Caliente racetrack, a popular spot during Prohibition, and provided a vital connection from San Diego to Arizona. But the tale doesn't end there. Rock slides delayed trains repeatedly, sometimes for weeks at a time. Flash floods, a fire that burned for 4 days, and even a hurricane wreaked havoc with the tracks. The railway also faced competition from automobiles as the horseless carriages gained popularity. After Spreckels' death, the heirs sold off their interests, and ultimately, the California Public Utilities Commission granted permission to shut down the line. The last train ran its final run in January 1951. You can still ride the rails on an old-time train from the line at the Railway Museum in Campo. But someday soon, East County residents may once again hear the whistle and the roar of trains across the line that traverse some of our region's most rugged and spectacularly beautiful terrain, if Ernest Dahlman succeeds in his dream to restore the line.
This is a public service announcement from CAL FIRE. One out of every four fires is started by arson. When an arsonist sets a fire, everyone pays. Arson fires destroy homes, businesses, communities, wilderness, and lives. They cost our community considerably in fire losses, firefighting expenses, and higher insurance premiums. They also tie up fire crews and equipment needlessly. CAL FIRE asks that the public help by reporting arsonists. A reward of up to $5,000 for each arrest that leads to a conviction is available. If you see an act of arson, try to remember everything you saw. Then contact CAL FIRE or your local fire department.
My name is Odeh Youssef. You are here listening to the Chaldean Corner, where we give you as much information as we can about the Chaldean community here in East County and across San Diego. Today I'm here with Father Michael Bozzi of the St. Peter Chaldean Catholic Cathedral in El Cajon of East County. Father Michael, thank you for being on the show today.
You're welcome.
You're very well known in our church, of course, and in the community, honored greatly. My first question to you is, who are the Chaldeans and what are they doing in San Diego?
Chaldeans are from the ancient culture of Mesopotamia, and Ur of Chaldea is the cradle of civilization according to the history. Even their name was given to the, today is called Persian Gulf, but it was the Sea of Chaldea. Throughout the history, they are mentioned in the history, half of the Mesopotamia was called Chaldea. Chaldeans are as a nation of 4,000 years before Christ, as a people. But they ruled Mesopotamia and they ruled all over the Middle East from 621 BC all the way to 539 BC. When you open the first page of the Bible, you will see that there are Tigris, Euphrates, and that is the country where the Bible starts to speak about the beginning of the people. And then about Chaldeans, we have in Genesis chapter 11, verse 27, God called Abraham to leave his hometown, Ur of Chaldea, and go establish the Jewish nation. These are the Chaldeans, so the cousins. And later, Chaldeans 539 BC, they were under the control of Persians. And when the Christianity came, spread, Chaldeans were the first to become Catholics, Christian Catholics. And in year 2000, anniversary of 2000 years Jubilee, we celebrated a church built 68 AD. It is today in between Baghdad and Babylon. Today, Chaldeans are almost 800,000 in the world.
How many, in numbers-wise, are Chaldeans in San Diego County and East County specifically?
Yeah. We have 40,000 Chaldeans. But in El Cajon, every four people, one of them is Chaldean. We have 25,000 in El Cajon. Second city will be La Mesa and Spring Valley. And the rest are scattered. You know why? Sometimes the family goes to live around their businesses. So we have 40,000 of them and maybe more now because every week they are running from that persecution. And the rest of the Chaldeans are scattered in other states, especially Detroit. We have 150,000 of them there in Detroit. If you ask why San Diego, because the same weather of our hometown there in Nineveh. Majority of Chaldeans are from the region of Nineveh. You remember Nineveh in the Bible, Jonah and the whale? That's Nineveh. Here in San Diego, 1951 was the first person to come here as a doctor to come and study from Baghdad. And then 1974, I arrived here from Vatican. I was studying there, and there were only 100 family. Then I went to Wisconsin to study. Then I came back. Around 1985, I came here to start, and since then I am here as a pastor of the community.
Thank you, Father Michael.
You're welcome.
For that information. Father, can you explain the history of the Chaldean language, Aramaic, and the differences in how it spread in its history?
Our language is Aramaic in modern aspect of it. And Aramaic language started from almost 1800 BC in north of Mesopotamia. And today, everybody speak Aramaic. And I wanted to know, and we are proud of it, that every Chaldean either is bilingual or trilingual or more. Why? Because everybody speak Aramaic at home, and like you do with your family. But English is our main language. We write in it. And those whom they grew up back home, we had to study Arabic. So that means, that's why I say the trilingual. And if some of them, they pass through European languages, like I myself, I study in Rome, I have Italian language too. But there are some other people, they went in Greece and they learn a Greek language. So most of the people are either bilingual, trilingual, or more. But Aramaic is the main language for our liturgy in our churches. And the same language of Jesus Christ. I teach it in Cuyama College. Since 1989, I am teaching Aramaic language 2 semesters in fall and in spring.
One thing that is important in the Chaldean culture was the first Holy Communion for over 100 boys and girls. How important to the Chaldean community is religion?
Chaldeans are all Christian. Christian Catholics. Everybody is family oriented. And there are 3 times when they celebrate in their family for their children. Number 1 is the baptism. Number 2 is the first communion. And number 3 is their wedding. And I had last Sunday 187 boys and girls. For 9 months, we taught them how to learn their faith, how to practice their faith. And just in parenthesis, I could tell you what happened for those communicants. Many of them, neighbors called me, they stole when they were children, balls or bicycles and all that. Everybody has to return when they go to confession to to return it back, otherwise they are in trouble. So being family-oriented, you will find out, for example, they are celebrating that birthday like your cousins. And not only the family, but all the community that come to share together. They're very close to each other.
Father Michael, our culture is definitely diverging with the American culture as we come from Iraq.
It has to. Except one thing. When we came here, we have to be American. And each Chaldean is the best American. And that's my intention to build in everybody to become the best American citizen. Because this country gave us a lot. In the beginning, they have little problems for money-wise to arrange their life. But I have committees, many, many of those committees, to introduce those newcomers to the American way. We take them to the schools. We take them to immigration area. After they settle down after 1 year, and you will find them, they become the best citizen, American citizen in the area here.
And what message would you say to non-Chaldeans who are living as neighbors with Chaldeans?
Yeah, when we came here, everybody thought coming from Iraq, you are Muslim or you are this or that. We are not. Islam came to us in 6th century, entered to Iraq. We were Christian and we stayed Christian in spite of invasion of the Arabs and Islam to Iraq. Today, Christians are persecuted by Muslims in Iraq. I'm sorry to say it. And that's why we have almost every year more than average 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 people coming, running from persecution. Because they killed bishop, they killed three priests, they killed many deacons, and they are destroying everybody around them, those terrorists. We love our country. But being American here is the best place for us.
Thank you, Father Michael.
You're very welcome.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today we're interviewing local author Roger Conley. My guest is a former newspaper reporter and editor and owner of a public relations agency. Roger Conley is also an award-winning author. He's authored 5 historical novels since 2004. Welcome, Roger. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you, Raina.
Tell us a little bit about your latest book.
It's a fact-based World War II novel. It takes two men through the final year of the war, and it describes the war very accurately. We even have real people in the book, President Roosevelt, General Patton, General MacArthur, and so on. And while it is a real tribute to the 1st Marine Division and the 101st Airborne Division and pays homage to the courageous young men that Tom Brokaw calls the greatest generation, it also has underpinnings of anti-war. It really does point out that war is a bad thing. One newspaper review said it's a great tribute to the Marine Corps while still deploring the waste of warfare. Incidentally, 4 of my 5 novels deal with World War II.
What is it about World War II in particular that draws you so much?
It was one of the most defining moments of the last 2 centuries. It changed everything. Before World War II, we had gigantic European empires, the English, the French, the Germans, and so on. World War II ended all of that. It also triggered some tremendous social changes in the world. It gave the impetus to new efforts in human rights, women's rights. It took women out of the kitchens and the bathrooms and put them to work in factories and started a whole big movement there. It began the early stages of getting rid of segregation. The armed services were integrated shortly after World War II. Just huge, tremendous social changes. Plus, it was one of the few times in history when 4 brilliant political leaders were all on the world stage at the same time. Roosevelt, Churchill, Stalin, and that evil, evil man, Hitler.
What do you find to be the most challenging part of writing this kind of fiction? Is it the facts of history, the research, all those details?
I'm fascinated by all of that, but it's the research that I really love the most. I love getting everything right. I wanted to describe the Battle of the Bulge just the way it happened, and so on. I really love that. Plus, I really enjoy talking with veterans. Mm-hmm. The veterans of World War II are leaving us very rapidly these days, and, right. and the ones I've been able to corner and talk to, it's just been a great thrill for me.
Well, it sounds like really gratifying work, especially for a history buff. One last question. What is your next book about, and when will it come out?
The next book is going to be a post-war book set in 1946 Los Angeles, and it's going to deal with the crime that took place in Los Angeles, organized crime at that time. Bugsy Siegel, Jack Dragna, people like that. And my protagonist, a reporter for the Los Angeles Herald Express, is going on an anti-crime crusade and trying to expose these guys. I'm just in the early stages of this book, and it'll be quite a while before it comes out, probably a year at least.
Well, we look forward to reading it. Roger, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us. For more information on Roger Conley and his work, please visit his website at www.rogerconley.com, and that's two E's, and on the Roger Conley Novels Facebook page. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf.
If you're missing a dog after the July 4th fireworks, the county has nearly two dozen dogs waiting for owners at the county's three animal shelters. The numbers are expected to go up as animal control officers continue rescuing lost dogs. For details, visit www.countynewscenter.com.
Or call 619-767-2675.
This is Rebecca Williamson with East County Magazine live on KNSJ 89.1 in Descanso. Today, I'm here with Sierra Robinson, one of our interns. She's a senior at High Tech High School. She interned with us last year, and she liked it so well, she's back again. Sierra, tell us how your internship works.
Well, at High Tech High, juniors find their own internships, and they immerse themselves for a total of 3 weeks. Last year, I shadowed Miriam Raftery at East County Magazine and got an in-depth look at many aspects of journalism.
You wrote a number of stories on emerging green technologies. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, I wrote stories about green roofs, solar roadways, and even flying wind turbines.
What other topics did you cover?
There were tons of fun topics, such as a restaurant review and fashions at a resale clothing shop. I also covered some serious topics, such as going to the scene of a search for a missing person and covering a judicial candidates forum.
What did you learn from the experiences as an intern at East County Magazine?
I learned how to post stories online, what it felt like to interview people, and it was just really exciting to learn about all these different things and topics that I never thought would be interesting to me. And every day was something new.
Where are you going from here?
I plan on going to Grossmont Community College for my first 2 years and then transferring. I'm hoping to major in creative writing or English.
Great. And now our editor, Miriam Raftery, is going to tell us about opportunities for any listeners who may be interested in internships.
We have opportunities for interns all over the place, part-time and full-time. We've had a lot of college-level interns, as well as some high school ones. And as a nonprofit media outlet, we also welcome community volunteers. Our interns and our volunteers can get great experiences here, and some of them have actually gone on to win major journalism awards and land jobs in journalism careers.
Thanks. And for information on how to get involved with East County Magazine's award-winning online news and station KNSJ 89.1 from Descanso, contact the editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a wildfire news update.
This is Jake Christie, and we're here today with Nadine Abbott, our East County Magazine field reporter who's been covering wildfires in our region. Wildfire season is approaching. Nadine, what advice does CAL FIRE have for backcountry residents?
CAL FIRE advises residents in the backcountry to have a defensible space of 100 feet around their property. They will also come and help check to see if it's okay and you have enough space that they can defend in case of a fire. This defensible space is vital for them to be able to protect your property in case of a major fire.
What are the most common causes of the wildfires in our region?
There are several causes of wildfires in our region. Some of them are nature-borne, such as the lightning strikes we had last year. We had a fire at the Chihuahua Valley, for example, that was caused by lightning. But also, when people use weed whackers, those can cause sparks, And it's important that when you weed whack your property, to have water or a fire extinguisher nearby and to help to protect from that. The other important source of fires in our region is when people go target shoot in the backcountry when it's really, really dry. CAL FIRE has said that in California state parks, you cannot do that. But the Bureau of Land Management still allows it. So use some common sense. And if it's dry out there, go to the target range and do your target shooting at a range. Because if you cause a fire, you can be held liable.
Well, thank you very much, Nadine, and keep up the reporting.
You're listening to East County Magazine, the voice of East County. We reflect your interests, the people's interests, not special interests. As a nonprofit, we rely on community support. You can help us provide community news and reflect a rich diversity of voices by donating or becoming a sustaining member at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll wrap up today's show with a weekend weather report. Monsoonal moisture is expected to stream into the area, bringing a chance of showers and thunderstorms on Friday in the mountains and deserts. Watch for patches of fog in the evenings, with sunny skies forecast for Saturday afternoon. On Sunday, temperatures will take a dip, with some cloudy weather, but sunshine will return on Monday. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, serving San Diego and East County, and streaming live worldwide on knsj.org.